everyone, may the words of my mouth and the meditations of all of our hearts be acceptable in your sight. Amen. Amen. Please be seated. Well, it's been a week, or two, or 10. As Election Day this past Tuesday approached, the existential questions haunted many of us. Who are we as a country? Where are we headed, and what is our path going forward or backward? Who are we as voters, marking our ballots in response to this political, cultural moment? Who are we as citizens and as Christians? Is our country going to be part of an authoritarian world or a bulwark against it? Some have worried, are America's foundations finally crumbling? The New Yorker expressed the free-floating anxiety of these days with a cartoon of two office colleagues discussing the end of daylight saving time. One says to another, "It'll be so nice to have that extra hour this weekend to dread the fall of democracy." But, last Wednesday dawned with neither anyone's greatest fears nor highest hopes realized. Voting went relatively smoothly. Those who lost their bids for office actually conceded. The election deniers did not create a red wave that some dreaded and others desired. It was all rather unexpected. So, let's talk about the gospel. As for these things that you see, the days will come when not one stone will be left upon another. All will be thrown down. Today's gospel exchange between Jesus and his disciples alludes to the coming of the Son of Man at the end of days. He speaks in great detail of political and geological upheaval and the dangers and the challenges that his followers will face. And yet he comforts them somewhat by telling them that they can trust in the Spirit's guidance at the time of trial. So make up your minds not to prepare your defense in advance, for I will give you words and a wisdom that none of your opponents will be able to withstand or contradict. The one thing Jesus doesn't tell his friends is exactly when to expect this time of disaster, when the very foundations of their world will crumble, when these events that portend both ending and beginning will take place. He tells them what to expect, but not when. And that's appropriate to this time in the liturgical year. It is the season of Kingdom Tide, which lasts from the end of All Saints through the Feast of Christ the King, which is next week. And this is why the vestments and the hangings are red, just for this short period of time. It's a time when we ponder eschatology, the end times, and the meaning of the coming reign of Christ, whenever that will be. And so we're going to be engaging with that over the next few weeks. But for today, it is enough to know, first, that this is our liturgical context, this pondering of the reign of Christ. And second, to see this scene of Jesus in the temple through the lens of Luke and what he is writing. And third, to let all of this entwine with this moment in which we find ourselves within the past week, this moment when many had worried that a great ending was at hand, and then, unexpectedly, it wasn't. So, now let's talk about Herod the Great. Herod, the king of Judea, under occupation in 1st century BC, lurks throughout this passage because he was not just a Roman collaborator. He was a builder of some renown. He was widely known for innovative design, major infrastructure renovation, and huge projects on such a massive scale that Herodian architecture was actually a thing. The most well-known of his projects was the rebuilding of the Jerusalem temple to more than twice the size of the original, which had been torn down by the Babylonians at the time of the exile. And so today, the spirit of Herod lurks over Jesus and his disciples as they are standing in the middle of Herod's masterpiece, ooing and aahing over the grandness of the building and its colonnades and its porches. Construction had begun in 19 BC, and it wasn't completed until nearly 83 years later, long after Herod's death. And it was destroyed by the Romans less than a decade after its completion. Not one stone will be left upon one another. All will be thrown down. So the tension in today's verses in this passage lies in the interrelationship between Jesus' description of turmoil and chaos and what Luke was communicating through this story to his early Christian audience in order to encourage them. Luke has Jesus predict events for his disciples that Luke and his community had already experienced. A time of traumatic destruction of the temple, of violence and division and persecution, the end of their religious and worshiping world as they had known it. It was a disaster. Luke knew that these were events that would either form or deform his community, and it was his project to see to it that it formed them. So he described Jesus speaking of a greater eschatological ending, speaking frankly, yet offering hope and comfort and courage. Not one stone will be left upon another, yet not one hair of your head shall perish. How little we know. How little we know on any given day about the future. Jesus' disciples stood in a temple that was on borrowed time, but they didn't know how little. Herod the builder could never have imagined that his masterwork would last for so few years after completion. And so, Luke's community had been through so much that they were learning the vitally necessary wisdom of expecting the unexpected and yet persevering in God's work that they were called to. And so should we. We've discovered rather vividly this week that expectation, particularly in the form of worry and anxiety, is a waste of imagination. But that's not the most important lesson here. The future holds what the future will hold, and especially when it comes to the end times, Jesus calls us into trust and courage and hope. And that will be sermons for other days, coming Sundays. But what does Luke tell us today about how we are called to live into this moment of the unexpected? Well, actually, we're called to nothing different today from what we would have been called to do had last Tuesday's results been different. Because God's call, no matter what, remains consistent, even or especially in the presence of the unexpected. The poor are still poor. The hungry are still hungry. The prisoners are still in prison. The marginalized are still targets of the callous and the cruel. And the earth is still heating up. The fact remains that our earthly foundation, as the gospel says, these things which you see, and upon which we stand, this earthly foundation remains in earthly peril. There is work to do. In the book, Braiding Sweetgrass, Indigenous Wisdom, Scientific Knowledge, and the Language of Plants, that our Wednesday book group has been reading and discussing, Robin Wall Kimmerer tells a story that involves a game of chance. It involves tossing peach pits that have been painted black on one side and white on the other. They're tossed up in the air, and then they land either on the black or the white side. And the player at the end of the game, with all of one color facing up, is the winner. It's sort of like a combination of craps and Othello. That's all I could figure, trying to envision it. And this is a game that Indigenous communities still play. But here's the story. The twin grandsons of Sky Woman had long struggled over the making and unmaking of the world. Now their struggle came down to this one game. If all the pits came up black, then all the life that had been created would be destroyed. If all the pits were white, then the beautiful earth would remain. So the two twin sons played and played without resolution, and finally they came to the final roll. If all came up black, it would be done. The twin who made the sweetness in the world sent his thoughts out to all the living beings he had made and asked them to help, to stand on the side of life. And in the final roll, as the peach stones hung for a moment in the air, all the members of creation joined their voices together and gave a mighty shout for life. And it turned the last pit white. The choice is always there. We have a choice. We always have a choice. Just like the early followers of Jesus, to be formed or deformed by any moment that confronts us. As creatures of God, it is part of our human nature to be able to choose whatever we want. Yet as Christians and citizens of creation, we have a responsibility to choose wisely what kind of future we desire in this moment, this unexpected moment. And to bring it to fruition. The arc of history may slowly, gradually bend toward the reign of Christ that is a reign of justice and healing and reconciliation, but the work is not all God's to do. We are called to shout for life, to face the expected and the unexpected alike with creativity and courage and hope. So the question is, what might that look like? I will leave you with this. According to legend, Martin Luther was asked what he would do if he learned that the world was about to end. He said, "If tomorrow is the day of judgment, then today I want to plant an apple tree." Amen.